Just to kick off with a question which is very much related to your talk tonight. So Montenegrin is official candidate for membership of both the European Union and NATO and seems to be progressing at full speed in both directions. And which one has priority for you?
Well, I mean, both are of equal importance, both serve, let's put it that way, different cause in a way, because NATO is about security, and EU is about developing institutions, and about but both are about setting the platform for the long term economic prosperity, because there are no really poor countries in neither EU nor NATO, and it is a clear indication that integration help countries. I mean, time-wise, it's like in some other cases, probably it's reasonable to expect that NATO membership might come sooner than EU, but it's just because we are already in the fourth membership action plan, annual national program. We started it just several days ago, and with regards to EU, we open talks, but it will take, obviously, 5-6 years to negotiate, and then the whole other procedures and so on. So time-wise, it may happen that NATO will come sooner than, as membership, sooner than EU, but doesn't really mean anything. Those two are, as we see it, just two sides of the same medal.
Right.
That's how we see it.
Of priority for you.
It's all campaign for Europe. I mean, so to speak, our efforts to be part of the Europe in every meaning.
So your country has had strong ties with Russia for a long time, as we discussed about tonight. And in recent history, large amounts of Russian capital have been invested in Montenegro. So now that you're looking to the West, the question would be, what are your next steps with Moscow? What is the state of affairs now? What do you intend to be doing?
Well, I mean, our priorities are clear. One is EU, the other one is NATO. You know, keeping good relationship with countries such as Russia or Arab countries or China, South American countries is obviously a goal, because even EU or NATO member states want to cherish good relationship because of economic relationship, because of economic reasons primarily with Russia. It's just that in Montenegro there is also historical background, and we really don't think that it is contradictory to pursue EU goal and NATO goal with you know, keeping good relationship with Russia. But I think also that some things are overplayed, so to speak, such as, for example, this perception that Russia is a key investor in Montenegro. Over time, the situation has been changing, and when you look at the countries from where investors come to Montenegro, well, you'll probably find Russia within top 10, but certainly not the first, the second, or third place, because actually with Italy, with Hungary, with countries like Norway and Turkey also, this perception is obviously wrong. And due to the fact that one of the biggest investments, this aluminium smelter, has gone bankrupt, also I think the changes that perception.
Okay. Thank you very much. So high level of corruption and organized crime are among the main areas for improvement, highlighted by the recently issued EU progress report, which was otherwise very positive towards Montenegro. And we know that that's probably one of the main issues of, let's say, bad PR for Montenegro abroad, the fact that there have been persistent allegations in terms of corruption coming at high levels of the government. So what is your position on it? Do you think it's still present? And if you think it is, how do you want to tackle it?
Yeah, I think that being aware of the challenge, we very much appreciate the new concept of accession talks designed by the European Commission. That is to open at the early stage chapters that deal with the rule of law, to close the very late in the process, or just before the accession, because that gives enough of time to countries to sort it out. by sorting it out, I mean develop institutions that are able and develop track record that shows, legitimate track record that shows that country is able to deal with the challenge. But it doesn't mean that up to now we haven't invested a lot of efforts, because we wouldn't have been in the accession talks stage had we not done a lot in this field. And, you know, I saw most recently Gallup's research, opinion poll, which suggests that actually people in Montenegro think that, for example, high-level officials are least corrupted in the region. I mean, it's still, bad mm-hmm. mark of 50% people think that that Montenegrin politicians are highly corrupted. But it's still, I mean, the best result in the region. But this is only to encourage to work further, that obviously there is certain progress, but more should be done. And I think there is high-quality action plans in place. Mm-hmm. Those serve to sort of navigate through those chapters in the coming 5 years. There will be also intermediary benchmarks. I think we're on the good track. And I agree with you that, generally, the most recent progress report is positive. But it highlights some things that we definitely have to deal with in order to introduce all the relevant standards to our system.
Okay. And just liaising to this, since corruption is such a big concern in general for the public opinion, would you ever refuse to entertain foreign relations with a country on the grounds of a breach of human rights and of corruption at high levels?
Well, Montenegro has been since the 1st of January a member of the Human Rights Council, United Nations Human Rights Council. Mm-hmm. And that has been one of the most prominent roles we've played as part of some multilateral forums mm-hmm. Up to now, since restoring independence in 2006, which gives us great opportunity to talk about our efforts to improve basic human rights in different fields, but also to monitor what's going on in other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, generally speaking, I think that obviously every country should keep it very high on the agenda. And the fact that, it is not ideal in certain countries, mm-hmm. the state of human rights, it is a challenge. And it is always, there's always a strong dilemma what to do. But I believe that, you know, by following common foreign and security policy of the EU, where we can contribute to the end goal of reaching adequate level of human rights in all the places where it is deemed there should be improvement.
Mm-hmm. All right. I guess the question wasn't this off the record, perhaps, but just would you use your position as a friendly state of another state in which you, find that there are human rights breaches? Do you think this is something for you as a, you know, one of the main officials of your state, as something to point out to that government? Well, use that position.
You know,
would you ever do that?
Why not?
Yes.
If we. If we believe or if we agree that there should be something to be done, mm-hmm. if we are, you know, legitimate communicator,
yeah.
because you need to have your own good track record in order to have moral legitimacy yeah. to talk about that. But, I mean, why not? As a friendly country, in an informal way and so on. Mm-hmm. In order to bring about even better or ever better, level of cooperation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, and then a question about economy. So the main, local news, but that had international resonance, was the one about aluminium plant, mm-hmm. KAP, mm-hmm. Which has recently been declared bankrupt, with a total debt that has overcome the 300 million euros, which for a country as Montenegro is quite a big sum, and also quite crucially, this was a very considerable employer in Montenegro, so a lot of people are unhappy about it. So the question would be, now the disaster is here, and of course, you know, some ways to tackle it needs to be found, but what do you think, you know, you could have done better? What has brought to a meltdown of such scale?
Yeah.
And how do you think, you know, you can avoid future mistakes of this kind?
Unfortunately, it's been an unfortunate case for the past 20 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
It first went into problems, deep problems, in the early 90s when there was imposure of sanctions, mm-hmm. and the loss of foreign markets.
Mm-hmm.
And since 90s, there's been a huge problem of how to operate this company. We tried with privatization, but it didn't work out well. Obviously, now it's under bankruptcy,
mm-hmm.
but I still think that after so many efforts, today this aluminium company is not any longer a social, so to speak, problem. Now there is development dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
If there is an investor who could really sustain this business, mm-hmm. expand it, to bring about more downstreaming, like not only producing, you know, rudimentary ingots, mm-hmm. but also mm-hmm. downstreaming into mm-hmm. into higher margin produce, then it really makes sense.
Right.
Because the key issue to discuss is about whether there is enough of electricity and at what price that could feed the system.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it. So now it is development dilemma. It's no longer, you know, transitional social dilemma because of thousands of employees.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's been down to a couple of hundreds, and it's sustainable. So either it lives and brings about more income for the country, yeah. more exports, or it's shut down. And there is also political discussion over it in Montenegro. But I think it is. I mean, if we take a more positive approach to this case, it also shows that Montenegrin economy has tremendously changed from the socialist economy some people still remember from the from the end of the 80s. Now it's a functional market economy. It's pretty liberal, but doing business says that we're now 44 in the world by the quality of the business environment. There's been tremendous improvement from position 90
mm-hmm.
in 2008 to 44 right now. There is improvement at the Economic Freedom Index. There will be certainly improvements in Transparency International, and so on and so on. So it all suggests that business climate in Montenegro has gone better, has been improved. And I think once this case is somehow sorted out, then the only thing we have is to discuss growth possibilities or development possibilities rather than, you know, transition problems.
Do you think that the rethinking of the business structure would have brought to better results, right?
My argument is that mm-hmm. if we can keep this factory, implying that ecology standards,
mm-hmm.
Market economy standards are applied to, and so on,
mm-hmm.
then it makes sense for economy to try to preserve industry base. It goes for the aluminium, but also for the steel mill we used to have, and hopefully the new investor will bring about new energy to the new freshness to this steel mm-hmm. mill as well, because tourism is a driving force of the economy. Energy could also be agriculture and so on. But the more diversified economy, the better. That I think that's one of the basic lessons for every economy.
Clear. Okay. And then this was the last question, you know, the last official one. Then we had that other one on just the one about ecology.
Uh-huh.
So actually this one was concerned me a bit in first person, because I actually used to have a summer house in Perisicado, which is now, you know, a different place according to the, you know, to what I know. So my question is simply, why didn't you feel that comfortable to replying about ecology?
It's becoming more and more prominent question.
Mm.
And I think sustainable development with regards to the tourism, but also construction sector, has mm-hmm. become more vital. You know, when a society starts from low income level, mm-hmm. then you tend to you tend to grab every business or investment possibility there is, in order to speed up the growth of the economy. That's simply strong pressure by different interest groups, by ordinary people. We want to live better. Yeah. But after a while, you realize that you are making some grave mistakes. And when you look at some of the newer investments, such as Porto Montenegro, for example, or Lušnice development, or some other resorts, then you realize that more conceptual zoning planning is taking place, and that's really important. Unfortunately, it's difficult to reverse. I mean, it's impossible to reverse, to go back in time, but at least it's important to realize where the problem is. And one of the responses is to try to bring about more comprehensive zoning document that should look at the whole coast conceptually.
Right.
That's one piece. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know if
holistic
this helps.
That's great. Thank you very much.
This question.